sharing is good with the noisy offering cans. We got, everybody got one? We handed them all out? So yes, we're good. Thanks, Owen. So it might be tempting, it might be truly tempting to melt down today's parable and to thin it out and to get it down so that it all it would be is a pithy little saying like, you can't take it with you. That would be the point of what Jesus was trying to say. Or something like, well, there's a reason you never see a U-Haul behind a hearse, because you can't take it with you, right? No U-Hauls and hearses together. But wise and clever scholars would advise that we avoid that temptation, because this parable runs deeper than that. It's tougher. And although we might like to look the other way, it speaks to all of us. Whether we think of ourselves as being middle class, upper middle class, lower class, wherever we are, whatever place we are in the spectrum, this is a story for us. A lot of people who hear this parable, especially those of us who live in North America, may wonder why it is that this farmer gets called a fool. This is called the parable of the rich fool. You could easily argue that he was a wise and responsible person. He has a thriving business. His land has produced so abundantly that he doesn't have enough storage for all of the grain that he's grown. And so he decides to make a plan. He will tear down the old barns and build some nicer, bigger ones where he can store all of the grain and all of his goods. There will be plenty of room for the wheat and the tractor and the plow, and everything he needs can all fit in those brand new barns. And when it's done, he'll have ample savings set aside for the future, and he will be set to enjoy his retirement, to sit back and to look at his farm and that fabulous new barns and how great it is and what a good job he's done. And that doesn't sound foolish, right? It's smart. It's the kind of thing that a good financial advisor would recommend that you do, that you save what you have and you make sure you have enough left over. Every year when I go to the Synod Assembly, there's somebody there from the Benevolent Association that deals with pastors' retirement funds, and there's a person there who will sit down with you and tell you how much you have and what you should do and whether or not you're going to have to work at McDonald's in your golden years. And so it's a constant reminder that we should save our money and be ready for the future. There's one small problem, though. The man had not given a lot of thought to God and what it is that God might be up to in his life. He's a fool. Not because he had wealth or because he saved up for the future. He is a fool because, as far as anyone can tell, he has lived his life only for himself. And he's a fool because he thought he could feel safe if he had enough stuff. We want to feel safe. And so the other thing about this guy is, when he speaks about himself and what he has in his parable, he only ever talks to himself. You would think that he lived alone in this great big house on this great big farm, because he says, what should I do? For I have no place to store my crops. I will do this. I will pull down my barns and I will build larger ones. And there I will store my grain and my goods, and I will say to my soul, myself, my life, relax. You've done it. In Greek, the word that is used to be soul in our reading is psyche, and it is a word that is frequently used in the New Testament to talk about your life. In fact, in the verses before this parable, when Jesus says that one's life does not consist in abundance of possessions, the word that he uses to refer to life is psyche. And the word is used again at the end when God says, this is what's required of you, your life, your psyche. The man believed that everything important in his life was contained in that well-built barn. It was his life. It was all he needed. And so sadly, at no point does he express any gratitude towards God or to the people who worked for him, planting and harvesting all of that grain. He has more grain and goods stored up than he could ever need, and yet it never occurs to him that he might share what he has with other people. I have all this grain. I'm going to fill my barns and then take the leftovers and share it with others. That doesn't occur to him. He has no time for considering what it is that God might be calling him to do with all of that abundance. He is completely clueless about the fact that his life, his psyche, belongs to God. God gave it, and God can take it away at any moment. He learns the hard way, if he learns it all, what the writer of Ecclesiastes wrote about. Everything that we work for in this life will eventually end up in someone else's hands. And as Ecclesiastes puts it, who knows if they will be sensible or stupid? Maybe they'll be wise, maybe they'll be foolish. Either way, they will inherit all the things that I have earned by my hard work and my wisdom, and that doesn't make sense. Perhaps he learned that lesson, and perhaps he didn't. All the effort, all the time. It is fleeting, Ecclesiastes says. It is like trying to catch your breath in your hand or capture a wisp of smoke. It is vanity. It is emptiness. Do you know that feeling? That emptiness feeling? That feeling when you realize that the thing that you wanted it so bad, and then once you had it, really, it wasn't going to solve all of your problems or make you feel safe, or confident, or comforted. My parents have frequently told their children that there will be nothing left when they die. They are spending it all now. And yet I've thought, I wonder what it will be like when they go. Will they have really spent it all? Will they have, you know, they're going to Spain this year. Are they having a great time? Are they really, will there be something left? And then I think, yeah, this is not my money. Who cares? Go have fun, Mom and Dad. I don't care. But that's a thing we have to learn to do sometimes, to say, it's theirs, it's out of my control, I don't deserve a thing. My mother-in-law worried that she wasn't going to leave us off well enough off. We didn't need her money, it was hers. It was a gift. She worked really hard. But she could have gone and left us nothing, and we would have been satisfied with what she did with her life, because that wasn't ours to use, it was hers. A few years ago, about 10, I was working for Augsburg Fortress, and I was managing their store in Philadelphia. And it was October, and I had been working really hard to get my sales numbers up to a certain level, because if your store got up to a certain level and you got everything right, you would get an end-of-the-year bonus. And they were on grades, so if you made this much, you got this level, if you this much, and it was by percentages. And the higher you went, the more the percentage got. So it went from like 3 to 5 to 6. I had worked so hard. I had been creative. I had been resourceful. I had put in extra time and effort to go beyond what I normally would have done, perhaps. The people that the Lutherans in Dublin, I helped them to design a new set of pyramids that they ordered for their church. There were Pentecostals in Lansdale who I went and visited, and I said, I would be happy to come out on a Saturday morning. And after they had this huge brunch and speeches were given and all kinds of things, and I waited and waited, and then I measured every single person in their choir. I think there were 30 of them. So they would order choir robes from us. Another church ordered brand new set of linens, and I could see every month that things were getting better, and I thought if I could just close all of these deals before Christmas, I would make this bonus, and it would be the kind of bonus that would change life at our house in a significant way. We would have felt the difference. And then in a conference call one Friday morning, I learned that all of the stores would be closing. And my job, along with 68 others, was being eliminated. And there would be no end-of-the-year bonus. There would be no commissions, no percentages. There would be no reward for all of that hard work. It was gone in an instant. Poof. Like a breath of air, like a wisp of smoke, it was gone. And the empty feeling that I had afterwards, do you know that feeling? Where you think this stuff is going to make your life better or safe and secure, and suddenly it's gone. It's done. It happens to all of us. Even our children get dazzled sometimes by the materialism of the world. And have you ever had a kid on Christmas morning say, is that it? Is that all? Did we open everything? Is there anything left? My husband's going like this. I'm sorry, I do that. So let our daughter go. She's not the only one. We've probably all done it on a birthday where you were hoping you would get something, and then the something you got was not what you hoped for, and we feel crushed. The truth is, no matter how much we have, we are always aware of the things that we don't have. There is always something more, a newer model, a better gadget, a more powerful tool, a bigger house, a smarter car. Even when you're able to feel good about the fact that you haven't been swayed by all of those new things, I can run around and feel cocky that I'm using my slightly broken phone that works just fine. And yet, we can still be tempted to think that having more stuff, more money, more things will somehow make us feel safe and secure. It doesn't have to be new and shiny, but I want to make sure there is just enough set inside, just in case. And then life catches up with you, and you realize that all those things, even the things that we think are essential to daily life, that they cannot keep us safe. No amount of wealth can protect us from a tragic car accident or cancer or flooded fields. Our possessions can't keep our relationships on track or prevent our families from falling apart. In fact, sometimes those things do the exact opposite. The story starts out with a guy saying to Jesus, "Please tell my brother to divide the inheritance up better." The money hadn't helped, it made it worse. Most importantly, all of that stuff, the money we have, the things that it gets us, they cannot secure our life with God. We cannot be better connected with God because we've made more, or we've earned more, or we've stored it up really nicely. Take care, Jesus says. Again and again, he says that wealth can get in the way between us and God. He says, be careful. Watch yourselves so that greed, which comes in all shapes and sizes, doesn't get in your way, because your life does not consist in the abundance of possessions. It's not that God doesn't want us to save for our retirement or for future plans. It's not that God doesn't want us to eat and drink and be merry. There are all kinds of eat stories in the Bible about eating and drinking and being happy, and Jesus, he has more meals with people. He's constantly having celebrations with folks. But he was also clear about where his true security lay. It is all in our priorities. It is about what is truly God in our lives. What is it that is most important, the God that we lift up every day? What is at the center of our lives? How are we investing our time and the gifts that God has given to us? Are our lives built around ourselves and the latest thing that grabs our fancy? Or are we looking outward to God and our neighbors? Where are we finding our joy? Are we finding it in serving ourselves or in serving God? Someone once said, "I have heard many different regrets expressed by people nearing the end of life. But there is one regret I have never heard expressed. I have never heard anyone say, 'I wish I hadn't given so much away. I wish I had kept more for myself.'" Our lives and our possessions are not our own. They belong to God. We belong to God. That's the truth of the matter. We are merely stewards of our lives and of the time and of the treasures that we have collected. That is ours to care for the time that God has given us on earth, but it is not ours to keep. We want to think that we are in charge of it all, and we rebel again and again, and we make stupid choices, and you look back and you think, "I really didn't need to do that." Jesus would ask us to think first before we make those decisions. And brothers and sisters, be of good cheer, because although none of it is ours, that is good news, that all those things we think make up ourselves, all that time, all that stuff that we think is the safety net of our lives, it all belongs to God. And since it does, and since we belong to God, our future is secure, our real future. We are safe in God's hands, and nothing can separate us from God's love. So be fearless with your life. Choose to be joyful and happy with the things that you have. Find ways to share what God has given you, knowing that your life has value not because of what you have or what you do or how you dress or how you look. Your life has value because you are a beloved child of God. Simple as that. And no amount of stuff is going to make God love you more or love you less. There is nothing that can separate us from God's love. And so Jesus says, don't be afraid. Don't worry about the future. Think about the birds of the air and the flowers that bloom. Don't think about all of that stuff. Think instead about the God who loves you and how you might serve him. Do not be afraid, Jesus says, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. Again and again, to give you the kingdom, because you are loved. You are loved.